Broadcasting to you live from Burnaby Mountain, BC, we are CJSF 90.1 FM, and we are diverse, independent, and yours.
I'm your host, Cam Wells. In this segment of our show, Shira Collings will be telling us about the National Empowerment Center. So what can you tell me about the center?
Yeah, so the National Empowerment Center is an organization led by and for people with lived experience of mental health challenges, trauma, and recovery, and we provide education and training on how to best support people going through those things in a trauma-informed, non-pathologizing, caring, compassionate way. And we also provide training and technical assistance to other organizations led by and for people with lived experience of those kinds of challenges and trauma.
So how do you reach out to those who have been affected by this trauma and are struggling to get back on the path?
We have a variety of different ways that we do outreach. We have our website where we provide a lot of different types of resources and information. We do a lot of webinars on different approaches to recovery, different approaches to providing that kind of support, and we have trainings that we do. One of our biggest trainings is emotional CPR, and that is a public health education program, again, designed entirely by people with lived experience, and it provides training on how to support anyone who might be going through a mental health crisis or any kind of trauma. And we provide that training to lots of different organizations and groups that serve people with lived experience of mental health issues. And so that's a big way that we reach people and kind of bring our approach to different types of people with different backgrounds, including like peer specialists, peer advocates. We've trained mental health professionals. We've trained even clergy, and we have trainings that are just kind of open to the public, open to anyone who has been through their own mental health experience and now wants to help others, as well as open to just anyone, a friend or family member who might be supporting someone going through some kind of extreme state or trauma and just wants to be a good supporter of them, or maybe who wants to better help coworkers or colleagues or people they work with in some other kind of way that are going through that kind of thing, and just get better at supporting them and also supporting themselves through that.
So in these trainings, do you ever encounter any myths or misperceptions about mental health and trauma?
Absolutely. There's unfortunately a lot of misperceptions and stigma out there. I think one of the biggest misperceptions is that, you know, if you're going through some kind of extreme state or if you're going through some kind of trauma or mental health issue, that is something wrong with you and means that, you know, there's this deficit in your brain that makes you fundamentally different from everyone else. And so you need highly specialized treatment and highly specialized, you know, someone needs to have a lot of education and training and a highly specialized background to be able to interact with you or help you. And what we really try to convey is that emotional distress and trauma and crisis are kind of universal experiences that can happen to anyone, and most people go through something like that at some point in their life. And, you know, we can do a lot of good and provide a lot of support by showing up authentically as ourselves and connecting with someone in a human-to-human way as they're going through that and being present for them. We don't need to have, we don't always need to have, you know, highly specialized training to be able to just help someone feel less alone and help someone feel seen and understood and valued as they're navigating that. Obviously, you know, there is a place for referring someone to a mental health professional and making sure they get any support that they want or need. But I think there can be this misperception that that is, you know, the only thing that can ever be helpful, or that if you don't have that experience or that training or background, that you really just, like, can't help someone. And we really try to counter that and make this about, you know, make mental health about community members supporting one another and communities being safe and welcoming spaces to anyone going through any kind of trauma or hardship, rather than that having to be this highly specialized type of thing that's only for people with, you know, broken brains or abnormalities.
So in your time doing this work, has there been any success moment or story that stands out for you you'd like to share?
Yeah. Well, there's so many. Let me think about some of the highlights. I think just at a pretty recent training I was in, I could share an experience with that where I was facilitating some real plays of UCPR, which is, we call them real plays instead of role plays, because we encourage people to practice UCPR by sharing something real that's going on for them, or maybe that happened in the past. It doesn't, you know, have to be a big trauma or, you know, something that would cause them to be in a bad place or feel flooded emotionally if they were to share it. But we encourage them to share just something real from their own lives and get support around it. And then on the flip side, support someone else who's sharing that kind of thing, just so that everyone can see what it's like to be supported in that way and what feels helpful, what doesn't. And then also, you know, what it's like to support someone else in that way who's sharing something really genuine and authentic that's going on for them. And in the last training that I did, we have breakout groups and kind of do some real plays. And pretty much everyone in the breakout group that I facilitated had just experienced a major loss of a loved one in their family. And everyone was just really struggling with that and really dealing with feeling just so devastated and heartbroken and isolated. And multiple people in the group were dealing with loss that was stigmatized in a way, like loss by suicide, loss by addiction, loss that really isn't talked a whole lot about, or that is just highly complex and seen as taboo in our culture. And it was just so powerful to see how in this group everyone was able to just support each other so much. And I think everyone walked away feeling so much less alone and like they had so much connection and care and support in a way that they hadn't experienced before. And multiple members of the group shared that this was really their first time being able to talk about those experiences so openly and feel heard and seen and not minimized or not looked at differently, not looked down on, but just really like validated in all of their feelings and in all of their experiences. And yeah, that was just so powerful and incredible to see that. And I think everyone walked away to like feeling like they could better support themselves and take care of themselves as they were navigating all of this grief and loss and stigma, but also could better support anyone else going through that too.
Light, thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Absolutely.
Thanks.
In this segment of our show, Abby Spudzinski will be giving us an update on Possibilities Project Plus.
So what's the latest with Possibilities?
Yeah, we've had a couple of new developments, I guess. Still exchanging devices, which is always exciting to hear. And we have a couple more partners, just organizations across the community that have been supporting this initiative and also just recognize that there is such a gap in people receiving the devices that they really, truly need.
So I'd imagine with all the craziness with the tariffs and imports, that probably had a trickle-down effect on the availability of some of the devices you deal with.
Yeah, absolutely. We've heard a couple of stories from individuals that are, whether they're inpatients in the community hospital or just actually living in the community, that not only the accessibility of these devices, but the affordability as well has really drastically changed over these last few months, and just really reiterating that this is such a problem for people and their families and how it really does need to be addressed sooner rather than later.
So that being said, for those who might have missed our prior interview, can you tell me a little bit about Possibilities Project Plus and maybe the urgency and the need for the work you do?
Yeah, absolutely. And like I said, thank you so much for having us again. I'm happy to share about the Possibilities Project Plus. Definitely it's a passion project for myself and a couple others that are involved in the team. Essentially what the Possibilities Project Plus is a free assistive device exchange platform. So it operates really similar to something like Kijiji or Facebook Marketplace, where individuals are linked with donors who are looking to donate a device and where they can hopefully transfer the device to somebody else in need. The difference is that all the devices that are listed on the Possibilities Project Plus are actually free of charge. So nothing is a buy and sell. It's just people being generous that recognize that a lot of devices may sit in storage rooms collecting dust while they could be used and really be such a valuable asset for somebody. So we operate out of Parkwood Institute in London, Ontario, and we're actually an affiliate program of St. Joseph's Healthcare in London. So with that, we've been able to receive a lot of different support, whether it's through the Risk and Privacy Department or just through senior leaderships and helping us really establish such a presence at the hospital and now growing within the local London community.
So how do you find the community typically responds to the work you do and making things available free of charge? That's a very generous thing.
Yeah, thanks, Cam. I say definitely we recognize through just over a year in operation that this is such a need for individuals. A lot of people are without the devices that they need to fully live independent and really just help with participation in different activities. I say some individuals are maybe more hesitant on accepting a used device. Obviously, there is risk associated with that. But I say for the most part, people are really accepting and just appreciate the help. And also are really generous to support us, whether that's through the donation of devices that really go right into our device pool for individuals, or whether it's more offering their time and expertise and helping us kind of really understand what the need is, what the gap is, and learning how to best fill that, and also work with different organizations and individuals, and really helping to, I guess, create a bigger lasting impact for those who are in need.
So you mentioned you've been at this for just over a year. In that time, has there been any success moment or story you'd like to share?
Ooh, that's a great question. Definitely, I feel like the number of devices that go out weekly has definitely increased, which is always really exciting to see, not only the devices that go out, but also the devices that we receive. We've had a couple, I guess you could say, higher ticket items. So we've had a couple of hospital beds that have gone to great homes and people that really are very appreciative of kind of those larger items that would be pretty large out-of-pocket cost for somebody. I should also mention that we also have more of a research side of the Possibilities Project Plus, where we're learning about, A, what are the impact to assist devices on perhaps someone's quality of life or just personal well-being, and also what are the barriers and facilitators to access, so whether that's more like funding through different government programs, such as the Assistive Device Program in Ontario. So I guess a couple wins in terms of the research side of things is we've had some funding from different more local agencies, but also some federal agencies as well that really help us keep this project and this service going, which is always great.
So if you could send any message to the community about the need for this program and to just share that generosity of spirit with the community, what would you say?
I have to think about that. I guess in kind of this purpose, you know, you may not be using that device, but it really could be such a treasure for somebody else, and you really don't know how far the values can go with just donating something that might be sitting in your basement and has been not touched for years, in terms of this could be a device that could really help somebody leave their home and participate in the things that they maybe once loved to do or that they haven't been able to do for a while. So I think it's the generosity of the people that we see in the community has been so apparent and something that we're so appreciative of. And there's definitely an element to giving back as well. And I think we see that day in day, and especially now with everything you hear in the news, it's always such a lovely way to give to those that who might be in need. And you really don't know how far your actions can really go. And we see that often.
Like to thank you for taking time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Absolutely, and thanks again, Cam, for having us.
It's my pleasure. HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
With Canada's health system under strain, going digital can help heal our healthcare. From virtual visits for everyday concerns, to faster, more accurate diagnostics powered by AI, technology is transforming care. Digital Health Canada supports the people and innovations behind this change. Learn more at digitalhealthcanada.com and subscribe to our podcast.
Welcome back to HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, Shira Collings told us a little bit about the National Empowerment Center, and we got an update on the Possibilities Project Plus from Abby Spitzinski. In this segment of our show, Annie Solar will be telling us a little bit about Arts of Life. So what can you tell me about Arts of Life?
Yeah, so Arts of Life is a nonprofit organization in the Chicagoland area. We have been around for 25 years. We're celebrating our 25th anniversary this year. And we support adults with disabilities who want to pursue careers as artists. So the organization was founded by Denise Fisher and by Ronnie Kuklich, who is an artist. She was our founding artist. And we have locations now. Our original location was in Chicago, and we still have a location in Chicago in Westtown. And we now also have locations in the North Shore and Glenview and the South Side. And then community programs out of the North Shore, which is what I run, which basically gets out into other local communities. So we partner with art institutions in Highland Park and Evanston, and provide some opportunities for our artists to be in more community-based spaces, so spaces that are a mix of people with and without disabilities.
So how do you reach out to the disability population to let them know that this path is open to them, that they can be supported in their work?
We work with providers, and we're always, you know, making connections that way. So a lot of folks will connect with us just from, you know, their ISC, hearing about our program, or, you know, from, you know, friends and family. But also we do attend things like fairs, disability fairs, transition programs often have fairs, so we try and do outreach there. And, you know, also just making connections out in the community, like with my program, I get to partner with a lot of local organizations and make connections that way. So we've gotten to be in touch and also get referrals that way.
So do you use any modified equipment or techniques with the artists?
Yeah, we do. We have, we support artists with a whole range of disabilities, so folks with intellectual disabilities, folks with physical disabilities, and folks that maybe have an overlap between those things. And, you know, some folks will use adaptive equipment to make their art.
So, do you find that the community is typically responsive when an artist with a disability kind of shares their story in more of a cool, relatable way, which the chart kind of is?
Yeah, definitely. I feel like my program, the community-based program, has actually been a really great opportunity to do that, because our artists are in these community-based spaces working alongside people who maybe don't have disabilities and maybe don't often interact with people with disabilities, and they're making art side by side. So in those programs, I have seen friendships, these friendships between people who, you know, maybe didn't know that they were going to be taking a class with someone with disabilities, and now they have like a long-term friendship, and they live in the same neighborhood, and that's been really cool to see. There's an artist that comes to mind, Marcello and Jan here, who attends classes at the Evanston Art Center and started doing that through the home community-based program. And he is non-speaking. You know, he communicates sometimes through writing, but primarily he doesn't really use speech. And so it's really been cool seeing him make friendships and connections out in the community. He's now taking classes also independently there. He used to take them with support from staff here. He's also made a great friendship with an artist who started taking one of our classes that supports a mix of people with and without disabilities. And now she's taken, she's a person who, you know, doesn't identify as a person with disabilities. And now she's taken six classes with us, six of these classes that mix, you know, these groups of people together, and she's become great friends also with Marcello, and just made a piece inspired by his art, because she loves his art so much. So she's a glass artist, and she took one of his drawings and made a piece inspired by it out of glass, which was really cool to see.
So, in your time with Arts of Life, has there been any success moment or story you'd like to share?
Sure, yeah. There are honestly so many. I feel like, you know, it's a really fun job full of things to celebrate. But something that's on my mind right now, because we're in the planning process for it, is the Disability Pride Parade. We did it for the first time last year, and it was kind of last minute that we decided to do it. I got tapped by my manager with just a few weeks until the parade, and he was like, you know, this is something we've been wanting to do, but no one's really been able to have capacity to make it happen. And we made it happen last year, myself alongside some of our other awesome staff, and our self-advocacy group, which I think is also a great success story, is our self-advocacy group. But yeah, our self-advocacy group of artists really helped pull it together. They made a banner to carry in the parade and designed t-shirts. We made a bunch of t-shirts and marched in the parade. And then this year we're going to be doing it even bigger. We're going to be having a table at the parade. We're going to be marching. We're, fingers crossed, it's not confirmed yet, but we're in talks about potentially having our studio band play at the parade, so we'll see about that. But yeah, that's coming up on July 26th, so hopefully if people are listening and they're in Chicago, they can come out and support us.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Thank you.
My friends, Abby's work speaks to the very best of human nature, for the fact is, we live in a
society
where everyone is so protective
of the little
you tend to have, that you don't often think, what if I gave this away? What if I got rid of something I don't need? To the recipient, to a person with a disability, it can be a life-changing thing, allowing them to survive, to thrive in ways they couldn't before. And that, my friends, is where it all begins. The recognition that our needs are not the only needs in this world, that our perspective is not the only perspective, that we can, in fact, do right and better by those with disabilities, that we can recognize that given the right tools, the right opportunities, the right moments, they can contribute great things to society just as much as anyone else. For the fact of the matter is, everyone has a story to share. Everyone has people who love them and people they love. And that a person with a disability might potentially be able to reintegrate into the community, have a better chance of getting around and participating. That is an amazing prospect all by itself. Yes, it's up to the individual to determine where they want to go, what they want to do. But opening that door, giving them what they need to be at their very best, is an incredibly generous thing, in my opinion. And doing so just because you have chosen to be the best self you can be, and giving away something, making sure that needs are met, that comes from a very genuine place.
Truth is, we hear so often these days, people who just want to accumulate more and more and more. Things so they can live in excess. Things they might not even need. To a person with a disability, whose basic needs are met, their security is in place, you might find they're actually grateful members of the community. They're glad to be a part of day-to-day life. They will bring their very best selves to the table, whether it be in a church setting, a school setting, a work setting, even just interacting with those around them. A person with a disability who's the recipient of such generosity, I would say, is very fortunate. Truth is, you can't solve all the problems. You can't change every life at once. What you can do is open the door to at least the possibility of an improved quality of life, improved growth of the person. And that is where it begins. If each of us takes a step to support the disability community, to build them up, to recognize that they have intelligence and strength, gifts to offer this community, one by one, the world will see much better, much stronger group of people. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.
Hi, my name is Lowell, and you're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, Simon Fraser Campus Radio.
Would you give me a beat?
CJSF 90.1 FM is the campus radio station for Simon Fraser University, located on Burnaby Mountain in BC, Canada. CJSF 90.1 FM. Diverse, independent, yours. Check us out on SoundCloud or at cjsf.ca.